Hi there. I want to welcome everyone to the Barnabas Ministry Spiritual Recovery Class Series. And today, our lesson is on loss. This is Class 2 in the outline that I'm working on. So we're going to talk about the whole idea of loss in the context of a bad church experience or leaving a church. And there's a lot of information here that I think will really be helpful to a lot of people. I hope it will be helpful to you in dealing with your church experience. And when we use loss, that's a kind of a clinical sounding sort of a term. And my wife's a therapist and a counselor, and so I get exposed to some of the more technical terms every now and then. But strictly speaking, a loss is when you lose something that you didn't want to lose, I guess is the best way to look at it. And if you think about life in a very big picture kind of a way, losses are very common in life. And there's really nothing anybody can do about any of the losses we experience. Some losses are necessary. Some maybe are not. But even if a loss is necessary, that doesn't make it any easier, doesn't make it any less of a loss. And at the most basic level, a loss is that you had something that was unique and of value, and you lost it. And you have pain because you lost it. And the thing you lost can't be replaced. You have to continue on without it. And these are very profound, ideas. I mean, they sound very simple, but they're very profound. And in dealing with a bad church experience and specifically leaving a church, this whole idea of loss is a very good way for us to understand the dynamics of recovery. And let's take a kind of a big picture way of looking at this, and we'll kind of narrow it down to how it applies to a spiritual recovery or loss of a church experience or loss of some sort of spiritual experience to us. And society has its way of dealing with losses. And typically speaking, society teaches us to keep losses and pain behind closed doors. And we don't have time for loss. We don't have time for other people's losses. And let me give you an example. No doubt you've been at a store, and there's a child at the store that doesn't get his or her way. Maybe they wanted to get something, or they had something taken away, or whatever. And that child experiences a loss, and everybody finds out about it because that child cries. And, of course, children cry loud sometimes. They don't cry very quietly and just deal with their pain. They're in pain, and they want the person that caused them that pain to know it. And they don't really care who else knows it. They're crying. And so most parents, when they hear a kid cry at a store, what do? They tell that kid to be quiet. And there's a place for that. Nobody wants to hear a kid crying in a store about something that nobody else really cares about. And there's a certain element of manners or the way that you should conduct yourself in public. But even then, this really teaches us very early as children, because certainly we were children in stores that cried about something and our parents told us to be quiet, that society doesn't really care about our losses, doesn't want to be bothered with it, and they sure don't want to make a big scene about it. Kids learn this, and we grow up and we become part of that culture that accepts it. Now, I'm not saying that every kid that experiences a loss ought to just be allowed to wail and, you know, throw a tantrum in a store. But the reality is that the society is very uncomfortable with the idea of loss. It just doesn't fit the way that we live our lives. And in a more personal way, as an adult, you may experience a loss, you know, the death of a loved one or some kind of bad experience, and people may feel badly about it. But, you know, other people may not even want to acknowledge it. It's just so uncomfortable for them to deal with. And it's at the point where if you've experienced a loss, they will not even deal with you until you're, quote unquote, over that loss. They're just so uncomfortable dealing with losses. And as far as the reasons why that may occur, that's beyond the scope of what we can talk about in this class today. But I want to talk about churches and, I want to talk about churches and how we deal with losses in churches. And the reality is, in churches, we're very similar to society. We want to keep losses and pain about the church quiet. Now, a lot of churches will try to have some degree of openness, but it's usually openness about certain things. People may be allowed to be, and that openness is a good thing. So people may be allowed to be open about, say, struggling with alcoholism or drug abuse or certain really destructive sins, you know, pornography or adultery or something like that. But I haven't seen a church that is real comfortable dealing with openness about its own shortcomings or its own inadequacies. And other than in a very cursory, general, high-level sort of way, like the phrase, no church is perfect, or we have our problems, or we've got a problem with this or that. And when you talk about very significant problems that a church may have, it's a real problem being open with those things. And so these things tend to be very shrouded in away from public discourse, and as a result, it's stigmatized, it's isolated from the rest of the life of the church. And so that's one thing that's a real problem there. So there's a lack of openness. Now, another thing that comes from these church losses, they often come from being very committed, being very involved, being mature. People that have limited or casual involvement in a church are not likely to experience a church loss. And if they do, it won't be a very significant church loss. When someone really is hurting over a bad church experience, it's because they were very invested in it. Oftentimes, these things come from having integrity. You know, if there's financial wrongdoing going on in the church, or people are being treated poorly, or there's other kinds of abuse going on, the reason that someone may leave a church under those circumstances has to do with them having integrity, not because they're spiritually weak. And frequently, those in leadership in churches may lash out at those who leave a church like that, and they'll say, well, they're quitters, or they're taking the easy way out, or whatever, as though there's something ignoble about leaving a church that has a very damaging systemic sort of a problem. But the reality is a lot of people leave situations like this because they have integrity. Now, obviously, people can leave churches because they don't have integrity, or they may want to get away from a godly environment where they can just go and sin without being told that it's a problem or that they're causing hurt to other people. I'm not talking about that. So obviously those things can exist, but I'm not talking about those here. I'm talking about people who leave a church situation because they have integrity, because they've tried everything they can to work through issues that are really problematic, and at the end of the day, they end up having to leave. And the reality is, for people like that, leaving is most certainly not the easy way out. The easy way would be to accept and conform to things that you know are wrong or unsustainable. And, you know, when people leave a church, there's other things that happen that are not good either. They may be labeled as bitter. And the reason I know this list is because I've done it and I've received it. Okay, you'd be labeled as bitter. That's one that people drag out. Oh, well, you're just bitter about these things. Or you're sinful. You're jaded. You're negative. You're slanderous. You're prideful. You're unspiritual. People that leave may have untrue or distorted stories told about them. Or the half-truths will be told. And even more damaging, perhaps, is that people that leave a church like that will be written out of history and written out of the life of that church, to the point where the things that they were involved in and that they were a part of, when those things are spoken of in the future, their name is no longer a part of it. It's just like it happened magically, and those people that were a part of it and made it happen are gone. And it's really very hurtful. It's a very damaging thing, but again, it reflects the idea that the church cannot accept that somebody left in a way that they don't like. And so, like, if someone is in a congregation and they start some ministry and then they go on some other, they move, they leave, but under good circumstances to be a part of that movement someplace else or whatever, they may be spoken of fondly. Oh, so-and-so, when they were here, they started such and such. But if that person leaves under some kind of duress and maybe leaves that movement because of its own issues, you'll never hear, oh, we started this thing and so-and-so was involved, but in... It just won't happen. They will be written out of the history and the life of the church. And the people that are in a church see that happen. And they know that if they leave, the same thing will happen with them. And it makes for a very painful kind of a loss. So church losses are really very different than the kind of losses that you might experience in your secular life. And they bring a set of pain that is really bewildering. And that's why this subject needs to be talked about. And so that's why we're having a class on it. Now, what are some of the things that you lose when you have a church loss? And let's look at a passage in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19. Jesus says, "Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also." Well, most Christians will have taken a passage like this at some point in their spiritual life and said, you know, I'm going to invest myself in treasures in heaven. And I'm going to, and the place where that is done is in the church. So you're investing your treasure in heaven by investing in the church. And I'm not sure that that's really the right biblical interpretation of this idea. I think there's other ways that you can put treasure in heaven without putting it in the church, but that's maybe a discussion for another time, other than to just say, you know, giving to the poor is a way of putting treasure in heaven. Doing things that you can't be rewarded for is a way of putting treasure in heaven. There's other ways to do that. But a lot of times people invest in heaven by investing in the church. And so when you leave the church, what happens to your treasure that you've put there, to your heart that you put there? So the loss here now is multiplied. It's not just that you're leaving a place that you hang out on Sunday mornings. You're leaving relationships. You're leaving meaningful ministry and work that's been done in that church. You're leaving your sense of achievement, an accomplishment that God's done in your life. You're leaving a sense of encouragement in your spiritual life. You're leaving a sense of belonging. You're leaving the money and the time that you've invested and the heart that you've invested in these things. And really, to someone who's really involved and invested in a church, to leave that church, you're really leaving the context of your spiritual life. You may have been married in that church. Your children may have been born there. They may have been baptized there. You may have gone through significant spiritual things in your life in that church, and to leave it, the whole thing just goes poof. The whole context of it just goes away. And that's a very, very significant loss. And churches really don't like to talk about that, which is all the more reason why we do need to talk about it in a forum like this. Some churches will also teach that if you leave them, you'll no longer be saved, or that you'll be under some curse. You'll be out from under God's protection, things like that. And so if you leave church, there's this idea that, gosh, I might lose my salvation. God might be cursing me. Because even if you know that those things are nothing more than scare tactics, in the back of your mind, you're wondering if they're still not true. And so leaving a church, you're wondering, well, where is God now? How do I contextualize my relationship with God? What makes up for the church, do I just go find another church? And then it introduces a whole other series of issues that we really can't even get into now. The point is that if you leave a church, there's a lot that you're leaving behind. And the people that say stupidly, oh, well, they're just quitters, they really don't know what they're talking about. Because the people that have gone through more spiritual hardship are the people that have wrestled with the decision to leave and have ended up leaving a church they've been involved in for a long time. That's a massive, massive loss. And so we've got to talk about how to deal with it. Well, you know, the sad thing is in churches, and really in the scriptures even, there's not a lot of help for dealing with the church loss. You know, the first century church had all kinds of problems. But there were some things that were very different about them compared to today. Today, for better or worse, we have this idea that if you don't like it, you can leave in a church. Where churches have decided not everyone's going to agree with us on everything, so we're going to be what we are, and if you don't like it, you can leave. Well, that opens the door for people leaving over all kinds of things that are still very hurtful and still very damaging. And it's good to have the freedom to do what you believe is right, and I'm not against freedom. I don't think we should be against freedom. But at the same time, the early church found a way to be freedom, to have freedom and to give people freedom, and yet not to make it a matter of, if you don't like it, leave. There's something that got really messed up with that somewhere between the first century and today, and we're actually going to talk about that later on in one of the subsequent classes about dealing with disagreements in the churches. But, you know, the reality is the scriptures aren't going to have a lot of discussion about this because they didn't have the same problem that we have today. And, you know, if you scratch your brain and think, well, where are church losses in the New Testament? There's not too much you can come up with. There was a guy named Diotrephes that's talked about in 3 John. In verse 9 it says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loved to be first, will have nothing to do with us. So if I come, I will call attention to what he is doing, gossiping maliciously about us. Not satisfied with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. So there was this guy, Diotrephes, who was being very heavy-handed in controlling this local congregation, wherever it was. And we see that he had this mentality that he was going to control who was allowed to come into the church, and even if they were legitimate brothers. And if anyone wanted to welcome them, he'd put them out of the church. And so he started drawing lines in places where the line shouldn't have been drawn. And John's answer to this was to call attention to it publicly. It's written in the Bible. I mean, it's written in a public letter. And that's one example where, okay, when churches do this, you've got to talk about it publicly somehow to draw attention to it. So that's one thing we can do. That's one lesson we get. Another story in the scriptures that relates to the church loss idea is the experience of John Mark. And in Acts 13, verse 13, we read from Paphos, Paul and his companion sailed to Perga in Pamphylia, where John left them to return to Jerusalem. So John Mark, who was the author of the Gospel of Mark, he was a young man on this mission journey, and at some point in this mission journey, he left, and doesn't really say why, doesn't say how, doesn't say what the issue was, what all went on, but it just says that he left them. Now, the story comes back in the book of Acts later on in Acts 15 and verse 37, when Paul and Barnabas are getting ready to go on another mission journey. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them, but Paul did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. Well, so now the scriptures add this descriptor to it, deserting. John was considered someone who deserted, so he bailed somehow, some way from this work, and Paul and Barnabas had a dispute over it, and as you know, if you read that story, they ended up splitting up their missionary efforts accordingly. And you'll hear people say, well, Barnabas was right, or John was right, or Paul was right. Well, they were both right. There's a place to utilize people that maybe have failed in the past, even if they really failed bad. There's a place for that. There's also a place to say what we're doing is very demanding. We've got to have people that are really, really up to the task. So people planning mission teams and mission work and things like that, they've got to be really careful who's involved in it. So that's, both of those guys were right. And I think the scriptures show that they both respected that each other could be right in this. Because they split up, one didn't force his will upon the other. And it, there's no idea that there's a uncharitable separation between the two when they have this thing. But if you bring it back down to John Mark, this guy, you know, he sacrificed a lot to go on this mission journey. And at some point in his life, he realized this was not working out. This was a bad mistake. And maybe Paul and Barnabas didn't understand it. We don't know. Maybe John Mark was immature. Again, we don't know. But we know that he left. And he experienced a huge loss over that. And I think it took a lot for him to someday to be useful in ministry later on. We read later on in one of Paul's letters where Paul says that Mark is useful to him in his ministry. And this is many years later. And so we don't throw people away that have bad church experiences. We shouldn't be doing that. But too often today, churches kind of have that mentality. You know, a lot of churches use a paradigm today where they have like 101 class, 201 class, 301 class, 401 class. But you know, I haven't seen a 501 class on how to deal with leaving the church. You know, it's just not on the map for churches today. They don't think that someone's going to be unhappy or that the church won't be able to meet their needs and that they're going to have to leave or that the church is going to have so much bad stuff going on and that people are going to have to leave just to stay faithful. Churches never think that. And if you're a church leader, you need to think about that. You really do. You're entrusted with leading people's souls for life, not just as long as you're there or as long as the program's picking up steam or whatever else is going on there. When churches don't consider this as a real possibility, they don't prepare people for it. There's no way to discuss hurtful things going on in the church or areas where needs aren't being met or where people are being mistreated or where God puts things on people's heart that just can't be accomplished within that local church. And people that are going through these kind of things, they're really on their own, and they have to face this almost Moses type of moment where you remember when in the story of in Exodus where Moses has to leave Egypt and go to Midian. And people leaving churches are kind of a lot like Moses in that. They have to get away to survive. And yet God works through them getting away and doing what it takes to survive. And, you know, but in the context of the church, this is so different than everything else going on in the church. Everything else, there's classes to prepare and there's support and there's encouragement and the leaders will talk about, wow, it's great to have so-and-so involved in this ministry and all these great things. But when people are at a point where they're maybe leaving because the church is not all it needs to be or because there's damaging or hurtful things going on, it's kind of off the map for church leaders. Let's look at a couple different loss models that have been developed to help people deal with losses and try to apply these in a church sort of a context. The first loss model I'll talk about is one that's pretty commonly known. It's the Kubler-Ross loss model. And this was from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who did a lot of research on death and dying, wrote very widely distributed books and things on this, very pioneering research in the field. And she had five stages that she identified with losses. The first stage was denial and isolation, where when the loss is first experienced, you think this didn't really happen. The second stage was anger, and that's where the phrase, this is not fair, might come into play, where this just shouldn't have happened, and I'm angry that it happened. The third stage was bargaining, and this is where the what-if questions, well, what if I had done this? What if I had done that? What if this had worked out that way? And when you've experienced a loss, the what-ifs just go all over the place, and this is the kind of stage that she's talking about here. The fourth loss is what she calls depression. And depression, there's clinical depression, there's varying degrees of severity to it, but basically a sense of hopelessness is really what is characterized by depression, where you just feel like, what's the use? This is so bad, I can't possibly ever recover from this. Nothing could ever be worth doing ever again because of this loss. And the final stage in the Kubler-Ross loss model is acceptance and integration, where people come to accept the loss and integrate that loss into their lives and move on with their lives. And again, that I just mentioned these as stages. Now, a couple of other people have done some research. John James and Russell Friedman wrote a book called The Grief Recovery Handbook. And it was for how to deal with losses. And it's a little bit more proactive approach. And this is a little bit more recent book. And I discuss it on the website at different times. But they mention symptoms of loss. And listen to some of the symptoms they go through here. A reduced concentration. A sense of numbness. Disrupted sleep patterns. Changes in eating habits. Roller coaster emotional energy. Self-destructive or excessive behavior. So that would be things like eating, drinking, drugs, sex, whatever. Just excessive behavior to the point of self-destruction. And these kind of things are going to characterize how people act when they go through a loss. And so it's not like they're countering the loss model that Kubler-Ross came up with, but these are really more symptoms that people experience. But they're really into trying to help people recover from their losses. And before they can really help people recover, they identify some of the myths about loss. And the first myth is don't feel bad. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, if you lose something, you know, if you leave a church, well, forget them, just blow them off. Don't feel bad about it. Well, that's a myth, because if it's a loss, you are going to feel bad about it. There's nothing you can do about that. That's part of the experience of a loss, is feeling bad. Other people may tell you, well, just replace that loss. You know, you break up with a girlfriend, go get a new girlfriend. You know, you leave a church, well, go join a new church. And again, replacing the loss, the problem with that is that it doesn't honor the individuality of what was lost. And it's just not an off-the-shelf item that can be easily replaced. Another loss myth that a lot of people will talk about is just to grieve alone. Take your grieving behind closed doors. Nobody wants to see it. And the reality is, if you grieve alone, you're going to grieve a lot longer. And we're going to talk about that more in a little bit. But there's a place for grieving alone. But there's also a time to grieve with others. And that's part of the healing process. Another myth is just to give it time. And this is a pretty famous myth. A lot of people will say, well, you know, in time you'll get over this. Well, time alone doesn't bring any benefit of any kind. Now, it takes time to put a healthy recovery plan in place and to follow it and to actually do the work that's required to recover from a loss. But just taking time alone without any other effort is not going to help any. Another loss myth is to be strong for others. You know, okay, you went through this loss, but, you know, other people are still relying on you, so you need to be strong. You know, there's a time to be strong and a time to be weak. And when you've experienced a loss, you are weak. And you may not have the strength to really help others while you deal with your own loss, and that's okay. Another loss myth is just to keep busy. Our country is famous for people that are workaholics, that get involved in all these different projects to cover up the loss and the pain that they feel from something like this. So you got to watch out for those things. Don't find yourself going and doing some of these things and then wondering why you still feel pain over the loss. You've got to realize that there's some very important things that you can do to help recover the loss, and those things are likely to mask it or to prolong the pain or the time needed to recover. Well, James and Friedman came up with some loss recovery keys, and I think these are really good. And that's why I mentioned them in the lesson here, and hopefully you'll find them helpful as well. The first loss recovery they talk about, loss recovery technique, is retelling. You've got to have a way to talk about the loss, to talk about everything about it, what was good about it, what was bad about it. And you've got to be able to process these things. By talking with others and verbalizing things, you come to understand them better. When you can put words and ideas onto something that's hard to grasp, you've been able to identify it and describe it better. And this retelling helps people deal with their losses. Now, another, and this is, you got to have the relationships, obviously, to do the retelling. Another key recovery step here is the idea of forgiveness. One of the things that really bogs down any kind of grief recovery, whether it's death, the death of a loved one, a divorce, losing a church experience, is forgiving. Now, a lot of people have bad ideas about forgiving. And you've got to call sin, sin. And then it can be forgiven. Until you can call it what it is, you can't forgive it. So forgiveness requires recognizing what wrongdoing is and then being able to let it go, being able to forgive it. And I realize that's not easy, but that is one of the steps of really recovering from any loss. And then ultimately, you complete your loss by recognizing the severity of it and its impact, being able to understand it, being able to integrate that into your way of looking at life, into to your identity and who you are, and being able to make what James and Friedman called emotionally significant statements. Well, with these steps, of course, there are obstacles to recovery. There's obstacles to these things. With retelling, a lot of times people think, well, gee, is this gossip or is this slander to talk about these things? Well, you know what? If you're trying to say those things to put people down, then it might be gossip or slander. But if you're talking about it to try to understand it, to try to process it, to make sense of it, that's not gossip or slander. And again, if you say things about people, it might be good to not use specific names or to just to be careful about that so that you're not doing those, you know, gossip or slander kind of thing. But, you know, at some point you've got to talk about it, and you may have to be specific. And I think that the heart is an important element behind whether something is really gossip or slander. If you're trying to understand something and trying to get a good perspective of it, and you're talking about it, it's not gossip or slander to talk about something. It's gossip or slander to knowingly dishonor others by repeating things without any intent to try to resolve it or make sense of it. Those are hurtful things. But if you're trying to understand it, make sense of it, and have a godly path to dealing with it, don't let yourself get tripped up by those things. Now, it is hard to find people to talk to, and so you may have to be a little bit creative on the retelling issue. You're going to have to find someone who can bear to listen to it, who has the time to listen to it, who could appreciate what you're talking about. And that can be hard. You may have to find other friends who have experienced the same sort of a loss. You may have to find a psychotherapist or some spiritual mentor that can really help with that. But retelling is a huge, huge thing in helping you to recover from your spiritual losses because it helps you understand it. Now, forgiveness is tough. And one of the things that's really hard about forgiveness for a lot of people, I think, is that a lot of times when a spiritual leader sins, there are people that will make excuses for that. And they'll just say, well, you need to forgive them. But if that person never recognizes that it was a sin and never recognizes that they need to repent of it or that they should be sorry for what impact it caused, it's pretty hard to forgive that. You know, because we get taught that forgiveness means ignoring sin. Well, scriptural forgiveness, you have to call sin, sin. And we get kind of messed up with that in churches a lot. Now, the great thing about leaving a bad situation church-wise is that you can gain the freedom to just say, okay, this is what the sin was. Okay, that was the sin. Okay, this was my mistake. I shouldn't have done that. Or I shouldn't have looked at this thing this way. Or I had an unrealistic expectation of this person. And you begin to sort out what's the sin and what's not. But then once you recognize the sin, you can say, okay, I can forgive that. And later on, we'll talk more about forgiveness as well. But again, forgiveness is not just pretending it didn't happen or sweeping it all under the rug. No, it's identifying what the sin really was and being able to forgive it. And again, it comes from understanding. You've got to be able to talk about these things to understand them. And completing the loss, there's obstacles to that. Churches may think that when you go through all this pain leaving a church, that's your punishment for leaving them or for falling away or for committing apostasy or whatever. And then the reality is that you're trying to take this as a stage in your spiritual life and learn from it and grow from it and not become embittered, not become cynical, but become wiser and more able to integrate these things into your outlook on your spiritual life so that you can be what God's made you to be. That's the objective that you're getting to. So don't let people's weird stuff get you messed up from doing what God's kind of brought you here for. If God's going to bring you to Midian like he brought Moses to Midian, he's got a plan. And don't let the people in Egypt mess up you now that you're in Midian. You know what I'm saying? Be ready to move on. Now, what are some of the things you can do in a real specific way? And let me wrap things up with some ideas here. It's not easy, number one. But there are some things that you can do. What I would encourage you to do is to make a list of the things that you've lost due to your bad church experience. List them. List the things that you miss that hurt. And these are some of the things we talked about earlier on, your investment, the things you were involved in, ministries, relationships. Maybe you lost a sense of idealism. You lost a sense of trust or hope or faith. But make a list of the things that you've experienced. And even if you write it down, it can be helpful, or make a mental list of it. But the point is, start putting words on your losses, because now you can start looking at those things and getting a plan to deal with them. Now, the next thing you do after you've identified these things that are lost, well, think about what are the good and bad results in your life because of what I've been through. Okay, I went through this thing, and here's the stuff about it that was really bad. Well, okay, what are the things that were really good? And be able to see a broader picture of it. A lot of people that are stuck in a bad church situation, what happens is they get so focused on all the bad things, they lose sight of all the good things. And in some of those situations, the good things may pale in magnitude. So I understand that, and I'm not necessarily addressing those circumstances. But part of maturity in growing through a bad experience or any experience is being able to see the good and the bad in that experience and moving forward as a result of it. And so you've got to be able to do that. Find a way to do it. You know, whatever works for you. If writing it down works for you, great. If talking to other people works for you, great. But find a way to understand what you've been through and put words on the experience. And again, I really want to encourage you to find people that you can talk to about this. A therapist. There's internet discussion groups for people that have been through bad church experiences and losses. There might be other people that have gone through similar things that you know, people that have also left the church you were a part of. And again, there's a lot of ways you can go in talking about it. Yeah, you can complain, you can just run other people down, or you can talk about it to try to understand it. And if you're trying to be faithful to God and let this be part of your journey and not just the end of your journey, then sooner or later you're going to talk about this in a way that helps you to understand it. And I understand that there's pain that you're just going to have to say, gosh, when they did this, this bugged me so much. It hurt so much. It was such a wrong thing to do. It was so stupid to do this. It's okay to go through that part of it, that anger related to the loss. But just make sure that you come full circle with it to the point where you can say, okay, here's what I needed to learn about this, and here's where that was messed up. And by being able to do that, you've elevated your own maturity and your own growth, and now you're even a resource that other people can go to for help in these circumstances. And, you know, I've experienced a variety of losses in my life, and I don't understand all of them by any means. And I don't think God brings losses into our lives so that we can help others with those losses, because that's kind of illogical. But I do think in the grand scheme of things, one benefit that comes from our losses is that we can help others with them. And I don't think that's why the losses happened. I think there's a lot bigger picture to it that, that we're not really able to comprehend in terms of God's perspective and stuff. But one good thing that can come out of your experience that's bad, or, you know, your bad experience, one good thing that can come from it is that by growing and learning, you can educate others so that they won't go through the same things. And if they do go through the same things, you can guide them and help them grow. So let me give you one final word of encouragement here. In Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 10, it says, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. We want each of you to show the same diligence to the very end in order to make your hope sure. We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised. So God hasn't forgotten the good that you did. And, you know, the stuff that you did that's good, that's for God, that really is treasure in heaven. And it doesn't get taken away or zeroed out because you left the church in which it occurred. That stuff is still good with God, and God knows. And no one can take those things away. But what you do is you build on that, and you learn, and you have the faith and patience to persevere and grow through these things, so that it's not the end of your spiritual life, but it's just another stage. It's a change from one stage to another. You know, the context of your faith may change, but the real treasure that you build in heaven is secure. And as you go through this stage, this change, you'll continue to put treasure in heaven, but just in a different context. So anyway, I know this is going through this material relatively fast, but I wanted to talk about the concept of loss so that for one place at least, these things would be recognized and validated. And as you think about this, remember, understanding loss is not a goal unto itself. It's part of moving on in your life so that you can enjoy and enjoy your life, be what God has made you to be. But in order to do that, you've got to go through these loss experiences in a healthy way so that you can move on. So anyway, that's the lesson, and I'll talk to you next time.